children are very, very attuned. I heard the story yesterday. I was talking to someone, and they were telling me that their little child, one of the first, you know, at the age of, I don't know, 9 months or, you know, whenever he started to talk, they would go by cemeteries, and he'd be in his car seat in the back seat and couldn't see out the window at all. And every time they'd go by a cemetery, he'd somehow know it, and he'd wait, hi. And they were saying, who's he saying hi to? You know, that's the real question. But nevertheless, the children are very, very sensitive and aware. And I have one story in my book, Turning Home, about a child I got to know who was dying of terminal leukemia. And it was the most amazing spiritual experience just to know this child. And I don't know if I'm going to talk about it now, but
no, go ahead if you want to.
Okay. Well, his name was Peter, and it was in the early 90s, and his family in Connecticut called me, and not because they were afraid of something, but because they thought I ought to see this. And the child, who was five, would talk. He suddenly began to have conversations with his grandfather, who had died about 10 years before this. And he would say things that the parents knew he could not have known unless the grandfather told him. And Peter took to me immediately. We'd walk hand in hand, up and down the street, and he would talk very, very animatedly about his conversations with his grandfather. And his grandfather said things like, he was younger now, he loved to climb trees because you could see farther. And he said, you get a different point of view when you were doing that. And Peter would say, you know, he told all kinds of happy stories. And in so many words, I would ask Peter if he was afraid of dying. And he said, no, because my body's not me. Mm-hmm. And I almost choke up because I can still see his beautiful face. You know, and when he finally passed in the bosom of his family in 1992, he immediately became a user of the multiverse. He, as a child, and you know, children are little ego machines generally, but when they face death, when they are terminally ill, they, most of them turn around and they become completely other-centered. I don't know if you've ever known anybody like that, but I've seen it again and again, and it's incredibly magnificent to watch. So he became an incredible guardian for his family. And this is what I mean by taking the path of least resistance. He was already a giant, a god.
Yeah.
You know, and he simply, when his consciousness shifted, he simply went to a close part of the multiverse where he could have some influence over his family and protect them.
And
he even
did.
Had influence in my life.
That's
a five-year-old child.
That's incredible. And
I've seen that even with unborn children, including one of my own.
Tell me about that.
Well, my wife and I have been married for 25 years.
If you want to. I don't want to die.
No, because it's a beautiful story. I love to share it. And he had a miscarriage. It was the first 2 years of our marriage, and it was a terribly shattering experience, naturally, and thank God we had two beautiful sons after that in the years following,
yeah.
One of whom now helps me in ghost hunting. And this particular child was never even formed, you know, in the womb. He simply was a miscarriage. And then, but years later, people would meet us, and they would say, you have three children, don't you? And we said, well, no, we only have the two, but we have three children. It became very apparent in recent years, over the past 10 years, when we had our youngest, 1992, and this is the one who helps me. And he said, Dad, there's somebody standing by my bed at night. And, you know, when you hang around this stuff as long as I have, you can't help but become, I suppose, what would be called more psychic, and you pick
sure.
these things up. And I would feel this young man standing by his bed guarding him. And over the years, it became very, very obvious that this was our son, who would have been our oldest child. I have begun working, and I in some of my earlier books, I sort of criticize psychics and stuff and kind of make fun of mediums and all things, but wouldn't you know, here I am working with some today, including Sherry Lee Devereaux, the psychic EMT of Arizona, who just wrote a great book called Shadows on My Ship. And the first time I talked to her before we started giving programs together, she said, who's Gregory? And bingo, it hit me. That is what we were going to name our unborn child. And she put her finger right on it, right over the phone, all the way between Phoenix and Woonsocket, Rhode Island, and she got it. And I love to share these stories because life is everywhere. Life is everything. The great British astronomer Sir Fred Hoyle wrote a wonderful book called The Intelligent Universe, and he was a very respected British astrophysicist, or honored by the Queen. He was knighted. And he just believed that life is not the exception in the universe, it's the rule. And I can really, really ditto that because of the things I've seen in the paranormal. It's not just whether you're talking about other planets, but other worlds in the multiverse sense. Life is everywhere. It's not all us, but it's everywhere, it's every when, and it's the rule. And life triumphs.
It really does. You have, Paul, and I think they're wonderful stories. You've illustrated a couple of gut-wrenching, beautiful stories. Yet also, on the other side, there are some things there that aren't that beautiful. There's some things that are evil and downright horrible. I think you refer to parasites.
I do, yes.
Explain that, because I think we're talking about the same thing.
Sure. Well, when I began to investigate cases in the early days and as I went on, I would often run into things that did not strike me as human. And certainly you can see the notion of vampires in their earliest forms. You know, their stories from, I'm not talking about, you know, guys with capes and sucking blood. I'm talking about ancient China, the ancient Middle East. There were stories of life-sucking ghosts. That's how the vampire idea got started, life-sucking ghosts. And I would see this from time to time, and in families that were really going through some tough times. And we're not talking guardians. We're talking, as you say, the other side of the coin, the evil stuff. And I can just see the legends of evil spirits and demons starting with these, what I refer to as parasites. And I call them parasites because what they seem to be are creatures from somewhere or somewhen else in this multiverse who are not human, who come through and literally feed upon our energy. Now, I wish I could put a scientific finger on that, but it seems that when you have stress, hatred, anything negative in a family, and other factors that have to be lined up, I mean, everybody's got stress, but when you also have factors that get involved with geotechnics and electromagnetism as well, you can have something that is hospitable, an environment hospitable to these parasites. On the other hand, if you have a situation where you have love, unity, humor, faith, good, that seems to cut off the food supply. And it is a food supply, because these things, I believe, will come in and will farm us at times. I've seen it happen. I've seen them hunting in packs. They're extremely intelligent. They learn very quickly. And it really is pretty scary. On the other hand, when you have their number, so to speak, I've literally chased them physically at times, in a way. And I've studied them at great length in cases that I did not consider emergencies, because the people were doing what I suggested as far as fighting them off. And it's an extremely interesting situation. I believe they have a culture. They seem to be clear leaders. And this whole notion of spirits may not be quite right. I think they might be just as physical as we are in their own world.